Good afternoon. I am going to be presenting When IRBs Fall Short, Creating Cultural Safety Systems for Community-Based Participatory Research with American Indians. And I just want to disclose that this is my first paper presentation, so I may be a little nervous. Hopefully it doesn't show. We'll see. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about where I'm from, the Center for American Indian Community Health. We are a National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities funded center of excellence, and we are based at the University of Kansas Medical Center in Kansas City, Kansas. We're also known as CAICH, or the center, so you may hear me refer to that throughout the presentation. But CAICH works towards health equity and equality for American Indians in the Heartland, which is the Midwest. I was previously asked to explain what the Heartland meant. So if you're not from the Heartland, I guess you don't know what that means. So using community-based participatory research, all efforts to reach health equity among American Indians begins within the communities that we serve. We work daily to develop and implement programs to close health disparities in rates of cancer, diabetes, cigarette smoking, and other important health issues. In the process, we're careful to honor and respect the unique cultural framework that is so important to a healthy lifestyle. It's important to note that our services really revolve around education, research, and service. It's also important to note that we're part of a larger framework, and we're a member of the American Indian Health Research and Education Alliance, which is also in Kansas City, Kansas, and it has many of the same goals as the center does. So I'm going to try and juggle my notes in my presentation. So really, what is the issue? And the issue is really twofold. So there's mistrust that we're dealing with, but there's also high disease burden. So American Indians have some of the poorest documented health outcomes of all racial and ethnic groups in the United States, including some of the highest rates of obesity, diabetes, and premature death. American Indians also have significantly lower screening rates for cancers and other diseases. They're often overlooked by healthcare policymakers and the public health community. Rising mortality rates highlight the urgent need for effective preventive efforts and therapeutic approaches in this underserved group. Research is necessary to evaluate and create the most effective clinical and public health approaches, yet many American Indians do not participate in research because of mistrust. So why the mistrust? Over the past few centuries, many American Indians were forcibly removed from their homelands and resettled in areas unfamiliar to them. Native languages and religious practices were banned. From the late 1800s to the early 1900s, American Indian children were forcibly removed from their families and sent to federal Indian boarding schools, where they were subjected to a program designed explicitly to extinguish their culture. More recently, more than 3,000 American Indian women were involuntarily sterilized by the Indian Health Service. Investigators have broken implied and legally binding agreements in cases over at least the last 100 years. Racial and ethnic minorities have participated in many studies where researchers failed to obtain informed consent, modified protocols without consulting participants, withheld information, and failed to follow up as planned. In studies that have directly examined the attitudes of racial and ethnic minorities, fear and mistrust of researchers has been identified as a deterrent to participating in research. While IRBs assure the rights and welfare of the research participants are protected, they are often not well equipped to address past histories such as these. So our particular community has also raised its own concerns. The direct concerns that we've heard included a fear of being taken advantage of by researchers, especially after news of what happened during the Havasupai Diabetes Project spread throughout Indian country. And just by show of hands, can I see who's familiar with the Havasupai Diabetes Project? Okay, just briefly, because it's not the focus of my presentation, but so you get some context. That was a research project that was, at the get-go, supposed to look at genetic variants among members of the Havasupai tribe as it relates to diabetes. What ended up happening was other elements that were highly offensive were looked at, things such as schizophrenia, inbreeding, Bering Strait migration theory, that kind of thing. So additionally, there's a concern that American Indian communities often receive no or little benefit from the research that's done with their community. And then, very specific to our institution, there's a blurring between the Center for American Indian Community Health, the University of Kansas Medical Center and the University of Kansas, which is located in Lawrence, Kansas, which is roughly an hour away from Kansas City, and who is initiating the research. So while we are semi-separate entities, there's a lot of intertwining among them. And while the community kind of respects and trusts the researchers from the center, a lot of times they're not sure who is connected to the center when we go in as the University of Kansas or the Medical Center. So in 2013, after hearing our community members voice their concerns, we added a law and policy core to the structure of our center. This was done really to facilitate the translation of research results into evidence-based policies and to address the concerns that we continued to hear throughout our interactions with them. So the core has several objectives, but the main one was really to create this cultural review and monitoring committee to supplement the institutional review board. So fortunately, in collaboration with our IRB, we review all human subjects research that proposes to work, primarily with American Indians. And that was an important distinction, because a lot of researchers, when they heard about this process, were like, well, if I have one American Indian participate in my research, do I have to go through your board? And we said, no, you have to have a primary focus. And this really helps ensure that cultures, values, and wishes are respected for our community members. The other thing that we were really fortunate about was our IRB at the University of Kansas Medical Center was on board from the get-go. They fortunately realized that they were not well-equipped to address kind of the cultural issues in this community that come up, as well as the history. So this is a look at our committee. And we are comprised of 11 individuals. There are 8 American Indian community members, 1 American Indian researcher, and 2 non-American Indian researchers. Our 2 non-American Indian committee members are skilled in community-based participatory research with expertise in qualitative and quantitative methods, and they serve as the scientific reviewers, but it's important to note they do not vote on the cultural aspects of our review. The American Indian community members review all protocols, consent forms, data collection instruments, CBPR plans, written materials to be seen and heard by participants, and dissemination plans. The committee comments on the cultural appropriateness of the recruitment plans, the data collection tools, and the dissemination plans. Additionally, it reviews biospecimen collection, and this was really born out of what happened to the Havasupai tribe members. Particularly, they're looking at what's collected, what's tested, where the specimens are stored, and what happens to them at the study end. So provisos are issued that have to be addressed prior to receiving approval, and it's not just approval with us, but our IRB will not issue their approval if they don't receive approval from us, so we're the first step. And this is a very basic look at our application process. It's obviously a lot more detailed, but it wouldn't all fit on one slide, so I broke it down. So we have an electronic application submission process in which we have a form that they'll fill out, and I'll show you that on the next slide, as well as upload their IRB documents. They're processed, and then we assign reviewers who are screened for conflicts. So if one of the committee members is listed as key personnel on a grant, then they are not included in the review. So within 2 weeks, we have our meeting, and we do that because a lot of the times we get the applications at the just-in-time phase, and so we want to be on top of those and make sure that we're getting those processed timely. And then full or conditional approval is issued. There was someone who had brought up the idea of actually denying applications, but the community were the ones who said that we don't want to do that. We want to work with researchers and help them tailor their programs so that they are appropriate. Plus, they also noted that they could always defer and table an application if an investigator wasn't being willing to alter their application. So this is a screenshot of the application on the ARIA website, which is our alliance. Some additional fields include how the project fits with the objectives of the center or ARIA, and then how the project adheres to the principles of CBPR. That's actually one of the requirements of registration. So even if CBPR wasn't in the original grant application, they have to modify it to include CBPR principles. Also, we provide core support from the center. So if a investigator thinks that they're going to need core support, so we have a methods core that can provide statisticians, that can provide help with how to draft the methods of the project. We also have a community outreach core that can help with recruitment and dissemination. Then they can state that on the application that that's what they're going to need. Additionally, we want to know what the expected outcomes are for the research, but also for the community, so how this is actually going to give back to the community. We have continuing review at 3 points. The community felt that an annual review of research wasn't enough because they said it takes an entire year before issues come up, and so they wanted to see more frequent review. So at quarterly review, we have a standardized form in which the study coordinator or the investigators provide a summary of the recruitment events, their adherence to CBPR, as well as any issues or concerns that have arisen in their work within the community. We also put these updates and any recruitment information in our quarterly newsletter, so it's another benefit to investigators for registering through the center. We also require bi-quarterly presentations to our community advisory boards, and this really gives the investigator access to community members so that they can get feedback and ask questions of the community members, and it gives the community members an ability to have a say in what's being done with their community. And then also we have our annual review that falls in line with the IRB. So the one difference here that we're looking for is renewed tribal resolutions or IRBs, or if they're working with a more urban population, we want to see renewed letters of support from community members. And then the benefits for registering, because we wanted to make sure that this wasn't another burden placed on investigators, that there were benefits on both sides. And to sell it to researchers, we really wanted to show that this was an additional benefit for them. And so again, we have that access to our core services that are really beneficial because we don't charge for those. So if you need your data analyzed and you want to analyze in a CBPR way, so including community members in the analysis, this is a perfect way to get it done. We also provide monthly cultural trainings in which the study teams are all invited to. Again, the assistance with recruitment through various methods, our newsletter, our website, that kind of thing. We also issue a committee specific number, so like the IRB puts numbers on your informed consent documents. We have a number that's specific to the committee that the community recognizes as this research was actually approved by their own community members. And so that also gets listed on our website. So once a study has been approved, we have it listed on the website for the study's been approved and what the approval dates are. So if community members are approached to participate in research and they want to know if it's been through our process, they can go online and log in and see if it is actually an approved study. And then again, they get access to our community advisory board members. So that really gives them direct access to the community to make sure that they're addressing community wants and needs. And then for the community, again, it's another level of protection, but it's important to note that this does not take the place of tribal IRBs or tribal resolutions. This is a protection on the university side, and we still encourage tribes to create those IRBs and do the tribal resolutions so that they can protect themselves on that side. It also allows the community to give direct feedback to investigators, and not having to go through making reports to the IRB, which we're finding that our community members really are not comfortable with. They'll make the reports to us, but oftentimes the IRB wants the direct report from the research participant, and it also gives them a say in the research. So our lessons learned. We're fairly new, so we've been around for about a year, and we've reviewed 3 studies and given feedback on one that's kind of been, it's halfway through its recruitment process when it came to us. And so we've received favorable feedback from both the community as well as investigators on this process. And investigators have actually been implementing our suggestions, and I think that that's been really helpful for the community to see that the investigators are actually listening to what they're saying. And future steps. So we want to further integrate the committee into the structure of the Med Center. Right now we're getting applications at the just-in-time phase, but we want to get them before they're actually submitted for those RFAs and the RFPs. We want to be included at the forefront so that we can make sure that CBPR is integrated into the methods of the project. We want to evaluate our process, and that's something that will be ongoing for us. We want to make sure that we're actually doing what we say we are, and that we're achieving our own goals. Again, we want to continue to get community feedback because that really makes it the CBPR process of it. So if the community sees that this isn't working, that nobody's going to the website and checking to see if this study's been approved, then maybe we need to fix that. And then we also have a study that is going on in conjunction with the creation of this committee, and it's looking at comprehension of the informed consent process as well as how that relates to trusted medical researchers, with the hope that that will create better informed consent processes in the future. So I would like to acknowledge our committee members. You saw their pictures, but their names are Jason Hale, Christine Daly, she's one of our scientific reviewers, Byron Gajewski, he's another scientific reviewer, and then Shelley Boynty, Julia Soap, Kelly Morris, Travis Brown, Ed Smith, Maura Garcia, and then Charlie Lewis. And then our supporters, of course, our Center for American Indian Community Health, the American Indian Health Research and Education Alliance, our community advisory boards, and the American Indian communities in the heartland that we work with. Our funding is through the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities, and I receive funding from or support from the National Cancer Institute and the Center to Reduce Cancer Health Disparities. Any questions? Yes. Thank you. Okay, so the question is, how do we retrofit CBPR into a study that wasn't originally designed to do that? So we definitely have the feedback. So we get the community feedback through the presentations with the CAB. We also mandate the dissemination to the community. So oftentimes researchers are excellent at disseminating to the scientific community and not to the communities that they work with. So we mandate that, and we mandate that not at the end, but throughout the process. The other thing is we look at different materials and questions. And so while we don't intend to, and our community members on the board aren't the scientific experts, so our scientific reviewers will look at those. And since we get it at the just-in-time phase, if it's a scale that they're using that's validated but not validated with American Indians, we will review it to make sure that those questions are appropriate for the community and the community understands those questions. And then we talk about trying to validate it with our community. The other thing is, like I said, the community itself, so the committee members who are community members, issue provisos. And so they'll say, you know, it needs to be stored not at the cancer center. You know, if you're taking biospecimens, they don't want them stored with the cancer center's biobank. They need to be stored at the center. And so we've got our own storage facility related to the American Indian Center that they require them stored there. And so it's difficult to, but there are some things that we can add, and that's why we're hoping to get integrated higher in the process so that we're not getting them after they've already been funded. And I think after we've been around for a little bit longer, it'll be easier to kind of catch them at that phase, because then we'll get more familiar with the people who are doing research focused primarily on American Indians. Yes, ma'am.
How, or did you need to convince the IRB at the Medical Center that they needed to do this? I know you said that they were very open to it, but I know that in doing it's not unusual research, but we're doing more challenging research in our area. Trying to convince the IRB that they don't know what they don't know
right
can be very difficult.
Right, and we were well prepared for that. So we had a sit-down meeting with our Director of Human Research Protection Program and some members who are on the Human Subjects Committee. We don't actually call ours an IRB. And we were prepared to kind of go the gauntlet with them, and immediately they were on board. They were like, this is fantastic. How soon can we start? And we're like, did we just hear that? Are you really on board with this at the get-go? And so we heard yes, yes, yes at the very beginning. Now, when it came to the actual implementation, it wasn't so yes, yes, yes. It's like, well, wait, we don't know how to do this. And we caught our IRB kind of at the process where they were switching from paper to electronic. And so they're like, we don't know how to flag this, and our system only allows us to include these check boxes. And we're like, well, you need to contact the people who created the system and add another checkbox. You know, so if you can check that they have to go through cancer, the cancer center, you can add a checkbox for us. So, thank you.